Hi to our listeners and welcome to the INSS podcast. My name is Michal Chatuel-Radoshitsky. I'm a research fellow at INSS. And with me in the studio today is Dr. Mark Heller, Principal Research Associate at the INSS and editor of the quarterly journal Strategic Assessment. Today, we want to discuss public opinion and public discourse vis-a-vis Israel in the United States, further to the accumulation of a number of developments, primarily the Gallup poll that was published earlier in March with findings on the American public support for Israel in comparison to the Palestinians, and two newly elected Democratic congresswomen who have provided some interesting statements regarding the pro-Israel lobby in the United States and the United States' bilateral relationship with Israel. So let's begin with the poll. 59% of Americans were found to sympathize with Israel, and 21% of Americans were found to sympathize with the Palestinians. Now, on the face of this looks like something that Israeli policy shapers should rejoice over. But if we scratch beyond the surface here, we'll find the following statistics. For Israel, this is a 5-point decline from 2018 and is actually the lowest point of support for Israel since 2009. That's a decade. For Palestinian support, this is an all-time high since the turn of the century. There's also a drop in the support of each of the parties for Israel, an 11-point drop among Republicans to 76%, and a 6-point drop among Democrats to 43% support for Israel. In breaking down the supporters into subgroups, at the ends of each party are conservative Republicans with 81% support for Israelis in the Middle East, and liberal Democrats with only 3% support for Israelis in the Middle East situation. So while there's a lot of support for Israel in general, with 7 in 10 viewing Israel positively and 2 in 10 viewing Palestinians positively, we see a softening of support for Israel, particularly through the partisan divide, Republicans and Democrats, but also within each of the parties. Most worrying, of course, are liberal Democrats with the 3% support for Israel. In fact, the poll says that during 2017 to 2019, if you're a liberal Democrat, you're almost as likely to support Israel as you are to support the Palestinians. And my question to you is, Mark, what do you think of these findings and what do they tell you about the future of Israel-US relations and about trends within the United States that you can anticipate will affect Israel going forward?
Well, I think that you posed the question properly, Michal, because even though there's a particular concern in Israel, of course, about U.S.-Israeli relations, I think this needs to be looked at in a broader context of political and sociological developments in the United States. What we find over time, in fact, is that there is, over a long period of time, is that there is a kind of a shifting waves depending on the point in the life cycle of administrations when one asks these questions. And it is perfectly normal that administrations which have passed a certain period of time begin to lose some degree of support. And that's why, for example, political analysts are always telling us you can expect administrations to lose support in midterm elections. Mm-hmm. And superimposed on top of that are more fundamental long-term demographic and sociological changes in American society. Now, as far as the first is concerned, what happens is that if an administration is perceived to be particularly close to Israel, then it's almost inevitable that the people in the United States who are dissatisfied with that administration will also express some growing dissatisfaction with whatever or whoever is favored by that administration. In the current circumstances, that of course means that people who are increasingly alienated from the Trump administration are also increasingly alienated from Israel because of the close ties between the U.S. and Israeli governments. But beyond that, there are, I say, longer-term trends that we also need to look at, and in some respect, they're perhaps even more worrisome as far as Israel is concerned. As time goes by, a lot of the factors that underpinned a firmly grounded bipartisan, identification with Israel in the United States are wearing away. The United States is becoming increasingly withdrawing itself from the outside world. There is a growing loss of immediate memory of the Holocaust and of the heroic days of Israeli rebirth and growth. And therefore, a lot of the things that were taken for granted 20 or 30 or 40 years ago no longer can be. Finally, I think in some respects, American politics is becoming, how should I put this? More leftist than it was. More leftist.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, as I say, in response to the, well, the triumph of the right, of course, in the 2016 election, but before that, the growth of Republican control of public institutions in the Congress, and also the demographic changes in American society, growing number. America will shortly no longer be a white majority country. And therefore, the success of people who are arguing that Israel is no longer a progressive cause the way it was 30 years ago, and that it is in fact the enemies of Israel or the opponents of Israel who are identified with other victims of the American system domestically and internationally, are therefore expressing their dissatisfaction with historical American relationship with the United States. Now, you may quibble with that, or you may think that's not an accurate description, but that's the way I'm looking at it. What do you think?
No, I tend to agree, and I think that there's a kind of a pendulum swing. So we saw what happened with Obama, and I think Trump was perhaps the backlash to what happened with Obama, and now we are seeing this, these anti-Trump forces. A lot of them associate Israel with Trump, so we can see that backlash. I completely agree with you. And perhaps I'll just add how this was perceived in the Israeli public, or at least how this was covered in the Israeli press. And I was actually very surprised to find that the left-wing newspaper of Haaretz and the right-wing newspaper of Israel Hayom, which is affiliated with Netanyahu, covered this poll not from the rejoicing 59% of Americans support Israel, but certainly with very ominous overtones and pointing out these trends that we've spoken about. So perhaps that is, at least for me, I think it's encouraging our ability to look beyond the surface and really understand these kind of trends that I think you've described very well here.
Well, I think it is one of the most disconcerting dimensions of this whole issue, which is that Israel has ceased to be an issue of bipartisan support in the United States and has become increasingly identified with one part of the political spectrum.
Yes, but I don't think that you can say that happened in the Trump administration. I think it was before.
Absolutely.
Well, and maybe catalyzed these days and during this administration.
Look, there were well-publicized tensions with the Obama administration. Obama represented a different part of the American political spectrum.
Yes.
And people who identified with him or supported with him were more inclined to resent what they perceived as Israeli over-involvement in American domestic politics. The only thing one can say is that, well, that's not unprecedented. It's gone on for 70 years in both directions.
Of course, yes. Okay, so let's look at the backdrop to all of this. And what we see is that further to the midterm elections, Democrats increased their power in the House. And among new Congress representatives are two new Democratic congresswomen who support BDS, Representative Ilhan Omar and Representative Rashida Tlaib. Both have been very outspoken critics of Israel and have attracted criticism through their controversial statements about Israel. The latest in which, for example, Representative Omar stated that she wants to discuss the political influence in the United States that says it's okay to pledge allegiance to a foreign country. And a few weeks before that, she tweeted that in this infamous tweet, it's all about the Benjamins, baby, but referring to AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobby, and the idea that AIPAC is paying off politicians to support Israel. And a few weeks before that, in January, we had Representative Rashida Tlaib, who tweeted further to a vote on a bill against the boycott of Israel. So she suggested that people who supported the bill forgot what country they represent. And here there's a kind of a line between anti-Semitism or just simply criticism. Now, this has obviously stirred a very big debate in the United States, but also in Israel to a certain extent, much less, of course. And there's this debate regarding what is legitimate and what is illegitimate. What is today, what is politically correct, what can you say and what can't you say? And when does criticism become anti-Semitism? So what do you think? How can you draw the line between what is anti-Semitism and what isn't? What is legitimate criticism and what isn't?
I've always felt that you don't have to be an anti-Semite to be completely critical of Israeli legitimacy, but it certainly helps. And there are, I think, an extraordinarily disproportionate number of anti-Semitic tropes and memes and themes in the kind of radical criticism that one hears of Israel in leftist circles as well as on the right, and even more recently in recent years on the left. These two congresswomen...
More on the left? That's interesting. But okay, finish your point.
Well, yes, because the left has always been critical of the kind of disproportionate influence of money, for example, in political processes. And that's an ancient anti-Semitic theme that the Jews make have an illegitimate access to disproportionate amounts of money, which they use to manipulate systems for their own benefit. I mean, we're all familiar with these.
Of course.
They come from the Middle Ages, long before there were settlements, long before there was an occupation, long before was even an Israel. So, yes, a lot of these established anti-Semitic themes are rooted in what is put forward as criticism of Israeli policy. And when somebody like Ilhan Omar claims, or her defenders say, oh, well, she was just criticizing the policy of Israel, frankly, that's just sheer nonsense. She wasn't just criticizing the policy of Israel the way Bernie Sanders criticizes the policy of Israel.
She actually wasn't criticizing the policy of Israel at all, but the policy of the United States towards Israel.
Well, she was criticizing the illegitimate behavior and activities of Jews.
Of Jews, exactly.
In support of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
never mind the fact that everybody in the United States exercises his or her democratic right to push for policies that happen to fit their own preferences, then that's considered perfectly legitimate.
Of course.
But the idea that somehow you can stand up and say, oh, these people are guilty of dual loyalties, that's another very, very old anti-Semitic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it may just be coincidental that these two women grew up in Muslim households where that kind of discourse is so internalized that even a second thought is not even given to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it resonates, as I say, in other political circles and increasingly in the so-called leftist or progressive circles on the left side of the political spectrum in the United States and in other countries as well.
So I think that it's actually in that public discourse regarding these different statements and expressions used to refer to Israel and U.S. bilateral relations, it was actually pointed out with Rashida Tlaib that when she spoke about, when she said they forgot what country they represent, she spoke about the people that voted for the bill and they actually weren't Jewish. But to my mind, it doesn't make a difference if they were Jewish or not. The idea that people who vote on a bill that supports Israel, they forget which country they represent, is very problematic. Of course, I agree with you that it relates back to this canard about dual loyalty. But I think that I think it's just a poor use of words. And I think that more should be done to avoid this kind of language, unless you have a political point.
You mean rather than asking Rashida Tlaib what country she represents?
For example,
yes.
And I think that on the idea...
They're, by the way, mm-hmm. they're both coming in for a lot of criticism, even from the people who initially supported them. I know Omar's electoral district in Minnesota, there's a lot of criticism of what she's done with her first couple of months in office, even among the Somali American community that put her into office, because she was not quite candid about what she intended to do if and when she got elected to Congress. And they assumed that she was running in order to advance and protect their own interests in local politics.
So that's interesting. And I want to try and take you back to the... We spoke about anti-Semitism, but let's speak for a bit about Israel. So none of these remarks here, the three remarks that I mentioned, refer specifically to Israel, and they don't specifically delegitimize Israel. But we know that this plugs into a much wider context of...
I'm sorry, Michal, for cutting you off. If you support BDS, that is explicitly anti-Israel. That's not about Israeli policy. That's not about Israeli behavior in the territories. That's not about Israeli policy on settlements. That's not about how careful is the IDF or the security service in protecting civil rights and human rights. That's delegitimizing Israel, pure and simple.
So I would say here that maybe one suggestion of where to draw the line between what is legitimate criticism is, I think that if you criticize Israel on policies, that is legitimate. But if you criticize the idea of Israel is not a legitimate enterprise, or a state, a homeland for the Jewish people is not a legitimate idea, that, I think, that is beyond the pale, and that is something that we as Israeli citizens, but Israel as a state, cannot argue again. And that, I think, I'm not sure, I don't know if it's anti-Semitism, I don't know how to brand the difference between anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism, but I think that is not something that you can engage in a constructive discourse.
Well, that's a simple distinction to make abstractly, but in practice, in day-to-day political discourse, it often breaks down, and it's a little bit harder to make the distinction. Because first of all, a lot of the people who are involved in this kind of anti-Israel activity, BDS, or other, are disguising their real agenda in order to broaden their appeal. In fact, they're quite explicit about broadening the appeal by broadening the focus of what there's. They're not there to oppose Israel. They're there to oppose human rights and freedom and all the rest of that part of the agenda. And they claim that they are in the same boat as other oppressed groups in America or elsewhere around the world, and they make big show of what they call intersectionality. And therefore, in order to broaden their appeal, they're not going to stand up and say Israel has no right to exist. But they are going to say, we need your help in combating these particular aspects or dimensions of Israel, and in return, we will help you to help promote your causes.
100%. I think it's part of the tactics. But absolutely. I disagree with you that everyone who supports BDS is anti-Semitic. I think that there are a lot of people that support BDS and don't have a real clue about what Israel is, what happens here, and are part of this kind of movement because, exactly like you said, they support other causes and it links to other identities.
Well, that's quite right, actually. And I think that's an important point, that it's important for people to understand it. A lot of the people who are brought in at the margins to support the activities of BDS without its actual conceptual core, which they may not even be aware.
Exactly.
Are appealed to on the basis of specific issues which offend their sensibilities, maybe in a universalist sense. And they don't make the distinction by saying, yes, we oppose, I don't know, confiscation of land in the territories, but we don't oppose Israel's right to exist. And therefore, the tactic or the purpose of BDS is to broaden, the movement is to broaden its superficial appeal by attracting those who are only opposed to Israeli policy or behavior in the territory, whereas their own focus is on the actual essence of Israel.
I agree.
So BDS has actually set for itself the goal of erasing the distinction between the territories and Israel proper. And in that eliminating the so-called green line. And in that respect, they have, I mean, they are functionally allies of the settlers' movement, who have the same objective.
So I tend to agree, but I want to take you back to American politics and ask you about Trump's response. So we know that in response to these comments that have that started off our discussion, Trump has said that there's a mass migration of Jews from the Democratic Party. Now, let's give a bit of a context. We know that the Jewish Americans traditionally support the Democratic Party. So Trump now says there's mass migration of Jews from the Democratic Party. Jews are leaving the Democratic Party. And the term Jexodus was even thrown around. And I want to ask you, firstly, how you relate to the term Jexodus, how it makes you feel. And also, if you agree with these kind of assertions, I won't say facts, I'll say assertions.
Well, look, first of all, we know that there has been some drift away of Jews from Democrat to Republican. But we need to keep it in proper proportion. Ever since the time, at least, of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the Jews have been massively, almost unanimously supportive of the Democrats, at least 90% historically. And that persisted long after their own objective socioeconomic circumstances didn't explain that anymore. For many, many years, it was said that the Jews were the only kind of identity group in America that had the socioeconomic profile of Episcopalians and voted like Puerto Ricans. Nobody else did that. The last decade.
We're not at 90% support for Democrats.
We're not anymore. That's what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. There has been a drift away.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's gone down to, I mean, it's not insignificant. If it's gone down from 90% to 75%, that may be enough, to make a difference in some important marginal electoral districts in the United States. And therefore, it's not surprising that Republicans would try to encourage that process and even overclaim the extent to which it's taking place. Mm-hmm. But it is true that a lot of Jews vote their social conscience more than their personal interest as far as voting behavior is concerned. So Jexit is the term per se. It's just a smart merchandising vehicle. That's all right. I mean, people do that all the time.
Okay. Well, I tend to differ on the Jexodus. I think it could be, well, for me, it seems humorous. It's a pun on the word, but I think that it could, and I from what I've read, people have taken offense with the term. I don't think it's such a great use of language, but we're running out of time, and I really do want to just get this last point across because I think some of our listeners from Europe would be interested in perhaps trying to think of any parallels between what is happening in the Democratic Party in the United States with these different polls, mm-hmm. And what is happening in the British Labour Party, for example, or elsewhere in Europe.
So you want to shift from Jexodus to Brexit, is that
okay,
it?
Okay, yes, let's do that for the last few minutes that we have.
Look, something of what looks like this kind of progressivization of the Democratic Party in the United States has taken place in an even more extreme fashion with the Labour Party in Great Britain, for example, mm-hmm. which is almost unrecognizable today as the party of Tony Blair and Gerald Brown and Gordon Brown. Mm-hmm. That was an entirely different party, just as the Democrat Party of Ilhan Omar is different from the party of Scoop Jackson.
Okay.
And it happens in part because of...
Look at the Likud party, look at Begin's Likud party, and look at Netanyahu's Likud party.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's absolutely true. And this happens because, well, it happens for half a dozen different reasons. Mm-hmm. Part of it in Great Britain is simply the mechanics of Labour Party operations, which makes it possible for more radical groups to take over control of the party, even though they're... Of the mechanisms of the party, even though they're not represented that way in the Parliamentary Labour Party, which has quite different views on most issues mm-hmm. than the mass base. But, you know, these things shift over time. And again, in part, it's response to the performance of whatever incumbent governments happen to be. And I don't know if there's anything permanent about it. But it is true that for the period of time when it's happening, they can do a lot of damage. And I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, look, it's what happens to the Labour Party is really quite extraordinary. And perhaps the most extraordinary thing of all is that despite the fact that it is now in opposition to the least competent British government in living memory, they're still trailing behind in the public opinion polls. Any other Labour Party would have long ago passed the Conservatives in public opinion polls, and they can't because they're out of touch. They're living in their own bubble world, and they're out of touch with general public opinion. And my guess is that the same thing will happen to the Democrat Party if they don't get straightened out before the next election as well.
Okay, I think our time is up. I would have loved to speak more, and I have a few more questions, but we'll leave it for this time. And perhaps I'll go with your last comment about the tentative nature of all of this, and really, like the as we spoke at the beginning, the pendulum swing. So we're just seeing a backlash, and hopefully this kind of bipolar attitude towards Israel is something that will haze out in the future.
It's not completely, however, we should admit, not completely divorced totally from the rhetoric or the actions of Israeli governments.
Completely. I thank you so much for saying that. And I think that's an excellent point to end with. I want to thank you, Mark, and thank you to our listeners. And I encourage you to look out for more INSS podcasts coming soon on our website.